This podcast is free and it's accessible to everyone thanks to support from listeners like you. If you value this show, please consider supporting its production by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute to give, and you'll be helping to support the production of this podcast. Make a donation at kuow.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Juvenile crime surged in King County in 2023. Bookings increased 61% compared with the prior year. A big portion of the offenses were from a fivefold increase in car thefts. You probably remember the many, many stolen Kias and Hyundais last year. But there was also an increase in more serious felony charges like armed robbery and rape. As for why more kids are committing serious crimes, that is still unclear, and a lot of people in this area are pointing fingers. That's according to a new report by KUOW investigative reporter Ann Dornfeld. And Ann is here with me in studio to talk about her reporting. Ann, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So a 61% increase in criminal bookings sounds pretty huge, but as we said, that breaks down into some different types of offenses. Can you talk about that number and what's behind it?
Yeah, like you mentioned, a lot of them are related to car thefts, so either stealing a car or possession of a car. But that what prosecutors say police say, they do agree on this, that when young people steal cars, often that leads to some escalating crimes. So instead of just taking it for a joyride, which they might do the first time, they might run it into a pot shop and commit a burglary, or they might have a police chase, or they might, do a hit and run. So what starts off as a lower level felony can really escalate into something more dangerous or that might land them in deeper trouble.
How are things looking so far this year? We talked about 2023, this spike. Are juvenile bookings still up in King County so far this year?
They are. In fact, it's kind of a coincidence, just like they were up 61% last year. You also have a 61% increase in the first 4 months of this year from the same time last year. So things continue to climb. But, you know, this isn't the only place this is happening. When you look at statewide data, you see really similar patterns. And you also see similar patterns in kind of similar jurisdictions, like San Francisco also had that two-third increase in criminal charges last year.
And you've been digging into why this is happening. You spoke with King County Superior Court presiding judge Kadu Shah about this. What did he attribute the rise in crime to?
Well, you know, a lot of it is considered to be kind of a reflection of the pandemic, both an increase since the pandemic where, you know, young people are considerably more out and about than they were a few years ago. And also there's not the same pressure that there was during the height of the pandemic to keep detention centers as empty as possible. But then you also have Judge Shah said is a lot of young people who were not getting all of the community services that they relied upon. You know, a lot of young people rely on school for not just learning to read and do math, but also for things like meals that they were receiving, that they are getting counseling at school, they are getting psychologists in some cases, and also for so many young people, they rely on school for special education supports. So for things that don't come as easily to some kids, whether it's a social emotional skills or academic skills, they were not getting that really intensive support that many kids rely on to do okay in school and to do okay emotionally. So you did not have those in-person services for almost any kids in Seattle. Some other districts did a better job, but it really wasn't present in a lot of kids' lives anymore. And so that can set them so far behind that they can have, you know, big behaviors later. And they, you know, a lot of folks say that what they're seeing is kind of the downstream of that, where young people were not, you know, were in stressful places, parents losing their jobs and not getting the in-person school and those things that they needed. And now, you know, it's been traumatic for them. So yeah, that's kind of the blowback from that.
And you also spoke to people who are pointing the finger at the changes in the criminal justice system, in, you know, especially juvenile justice. And what are they saying about what they attribute this rise in bookings to?
Well, it's really worth noting that King County has been a leader nationwide in reducing the number of young people who are detained. That's been going on for a couple of decades now. This was a county that was really an early adopter in some of the alternative to incarceration. So you saw those numbers really plummet. I mean, it's pretty exponential how far they had dropped just even in the decade before the pandemic.
And in terms of kids behind bars.
In terms of kids behind bars, right. And they were really moving to diversion models and to rehabilitation instead of prosecution. And then, of course, you know, just as with the adult courts, you also saw a decriminalization of a lot of drug offenses and decriminalization of things like child prostitution. You know, it used to be that they'd go after young people who were accused of sex work, and now much more often they'll go after the pimps or their clients,
the right? people who traffic them.
Exactly, yeah. And the young people are considered victims. So you see a lot of these cases are being handled, just whether it's in the adult courts or in the juvenile courts, very differently than they were a couple decades ago. So that has been a big decrease. And then also a lot more diversion has been going on, where young people are monitored by juvenile probation counselors, and there are certain requirements. They have to go to school, have curfews, you know, follow family rules, and maybe go to work, things like that, go to counseling and drug treatment. That has been kind of one of the ways that King County for many years has handled a large number of misdemeanors and lower level felonies. But what's interesting is that simultaneous to the pandemic times, right before the pandemic and during, you also saw a lot of juvenile justice reforms that were focused at, in King County, zero youth detention, trying to close our detention center and move to community-based supports for young people. And so some of those changes include putting more people, young people, on electronic home monitoring rather than keeping them in detention, or sentencing them to that instead of the state long-term youth prison. But you also have a shift, instead of court-based monitoring of diverted kids, you have this community-based system called Restorative Community Pathways that has taken about, I believe, around 750 young people between 2021, when it started, and 2023, and let nonprofits monitor their progress rather than the courts.
So all of these changes have been going on. And I want to talk more about restorative community pathways in just a second, but it sounds like you're saying that some of these changes are making law enforcement officials, for example, uncomfortable, and they are looking at this increased rate of bookings for juveniles in the last couple of years and saying, hey, some of these changes might be responsible. Can you tell me more about where they're coming from with this?
Right. Well, I spoke to the chief of the Renton Police. They're seeing a lot of juvenile crime, and they say, the police chief says, that he thinks that there isn't the sense of accountability for young people. They feel like they're going to basically get a slap on the wrist, if anything, and then be back on the street, whether on electronic home monitoring or without any charges, period. He says that he understands being empathetic to young people, but that they're not getting the empathy that they need if they're not ever ending up incarcerated, where he says for a lot of young people, that's the most likely chance they are to get the things that they need, like therapy and substance treatment. Mm. So that really contradicts what a lot of people have said, which is that a lot of advocates for youth and of juvenile justice reform say that incarceration is incredibly traumatic for kids, and that it is more likely to lead to future offenses and life in prison as an adult.
Recidivism, yeah. So let's talk about restorative community pathways. Of course, criminal justice reform advocates would push back hard on what, for example, the Renton police chief is saying about these changes contributing to a rise in bookings. How is restorative community pathways supposed to be working? And do we know if these services are actually getting delivered to the young people that they are monitoring?
Yeah, it's been a very controversial program. It was started by the county in 2021, and they've spent about $17.5 million for it. The way it's supposed to work is there is a network of nonprofit organizations that offer what they say are restorative services for young people and for their crime victims. And they are supposed to offer services to the young people, including kind of a group counseling, healing circles, some
conflict management training,
and some of them are more arts focused. There is just different kind of angles that they have. Some are more focused on young Black kids. Some are more focused on Asian Pacific Islanders. So it's supposed to give a more tailored community-based approach to working with young people to figure out how to get them on a better path and have them take accountability for their actions. What's interesting about Restorative Community Pathways is that although it has restorative in the title and it talks about restorative justice, it differs from most of the restorative justice programs that I've seen in looking at studies nationwide in that it doesn't have a primary focus of bringing together young people who are accused with crimes and the people who have been harmed by those crimes to get them together to understand each other and for the young person to kind of face the harm that they caused. That is floated as one of the options that young people can do if the victim is interested in doing that, but it's not a fundamental part of the program. And so that really differs from a lot of the more kind of restorative circles that you see in other municipalities and other counties. So it is kind of hard to compare or to say that this is a model that has worked elsewhere, because I have not seen the identical model or a very similar model anywhere else that has been studied. So what it's supposed to do, though, is allow young people to avoid criminal charges altogether, to stay out of court entirely and to completely divest from the court system so that the prosecuting attorney knows that this young person has been referred to the community groups, but they don't end up with any kind of criminal record as long as they complete the program and they don't have any further charges.
Hmm. Is there greater scrutiny on this program now that we are seeing a rise in bookings over the last couple of years? I mean, it's only been around since 2021. You know, we're not going to be, able to draw any conclusions about the impact broadly, in just a short amount of time. But now that we do have this booking, statistics, 61% up in 2023 for juveniles, is there more pressure on these programs to prove that they can deliver on the promise of diverting from the criminal justice system and really providing services that keep people out of the system?
Yeah, I think that the pressure for increased scrutiny came even before there was this, very kind of intense spike in juvenile crime. I did some reporting about a year ago looking at how minimal the county oversight was of the program. Basically, the nonprofits were required to report not even their completion rate, how many young people had completed the program, or the services they received, basically to let the young people and the victims do a survey to say, did you feel this helped? So after that coverage and some other criticism in the media, there was a demand by the King County Council for more data. That data just came out about a week ago from Restorative Community Pathways via the King County Executive's Office. And it doesn't give us a complete picture of whether it's successful, but it does have some more details, like how many young people have been served and how many have completed the program. And it really is falling short of the initial goals. The initial goals were to serve 400 young people a year, and it served fewer than half that in last year. They only looked at 2023 for the data. But it really has not kind of lived up to its promise so far. But the prosecuting attorney who handles juvenile cases, Jimmy Hung, told me that they're still optimistic about it and that it's too soon to tell whether it works. But that they're going to be looking at kind of long-term recidivism data and other factors.
The King County prosecutor, Lisa Mannion, has taken notice of this spike in juvenile crime over the last year and a half or so, and she's also gotten involved. What is her office doing here at the King County prosecutor's office level?
Well, she recently wrote a letter to mayors and police chiefs and council members across King County and basically acknowledged their concern about this spike in juvenile crime, but also assured them that they are taking it very seriously, that they have a new initiative called J-Watch, where they are basically getting together both people from the prosecuting attorney's office and also law enforcement jurisdictions across the county to try to share information and track some of the crime sprees that they've been seeing, try to see if they can identify some of the suspects in that, and that has been successful. And they've even they've worked on to prosecute a murder suspect already. And she also said that prosecutors treat each case individually and that their hands are tied in some cases by some changes to state law, like that require typically misdemeanor offenses to be diverted rather than to be prosecuted. And that there are other kind of law changes that really limit how they are able to treat some of these cases, and that they don't always have the discretion that the law enforcement might attribute to them. But she was basically acknowledging that they are taking it seriously and that they are, you know, putting more emphasis on it. An interesting thing is that the prosecuting attorney's office wasn't able to fully explain this to me, but the percentage of cases that are being sent to restorative community pathways has really gone down in a few years. It's, I believe it was 44% when it started out in 2022, the first full year, and it's down nearly half that this year. Whether it's a lack of capacity or whether they are seeing more serious crimes that don't qualify for that, they said it wasn't, you know, there wasn't a simple answer. But it does look like that program has been kind of struggling.
Hmm. So, Anne, these changes in how the prosecutor's office handles juvenile justice cases, juvenile crime, how many kids would end up in jail versus diversion programs, they've been going on for many years. Some of the more recent diversion efforts, you know, have been up and running, like the restorative community pathway since 2021. And now we see this spike in crime, including carjackings, including some increase in violent crime by juveniles. Is there a risk that there is a knee-jerk reaction and critics start to say, hey, these diversion programs aren't working, when really we don't have enough data? And the increase in crime over the last couple of years has a lot of factors, including the pandemic, that could be contributing to it.
Absolutely. It's very hard to disentangle how much of this is a bounce back from the pandemic, and how much of it is the changes to juvenile justice reform or anything else for that matter. I think that what the best possible chance we have to figure it out is to collect as much data, to track as much data on who is getting in trouble, what other risk factors they have, and to track their progress carefully. Even though these organizations want the county to divest themselves of, you know, monitoring young people, unless anyone does it, whether it's a university or the county, there's really no way to scientifically kind of analyze what is leading to what's correlation and what's causation. And because the county started this pilot program, Restorative Community Pathways, without a control group, they let young people decide whether to sign up for it rather than assigning some to it. We don't really have that comparison, or we can see like, well, what happened to young people who were assigned to traditional diversion or detention for that matter, which is less likely. But it's really hard to take that kind of social science perspective, which is really the only way that you're going to have any good opportunity to determine in King County, with the factors that shaped King County, young people's development, what is leading to this spike, and whether it's primarily just return to the baseline before the pandemic, or whether there are, you know, policy or legal factors at play.
And it's a really difficult issue, very complex, and anything you're going to be watching for as this whole thing unfolds.
Well, one of the things that the prosecuting attorney's office told me is that they look at about 3 years of data when they are determining recidivism rates, and they want to compare whether one program or effort is working versus another. They say that they have not gathered enough data to see whether some of these efforts have worked, since they only date back a couple of years. And they did say that 28% of the 747 young people who've been diverted to community groups rather than gone through the court diversion since 2023, 28% have had another juvenile criminal case referred to the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. They said, though, that they can't really determine whether that's high or low because they're not looking at the equivalent data yet for young people who went through other programs. So I'm really interested in seeing more of that longitudinal data and see how it stacks up, and also just really interested to see how, you know, whether we kind of start tapering off and getting into a more similar to the baseline before the pandemic crime rate among young people, and any other efforts to change the way that their cases are handled and they are served.
Yeah. And Kia and Hyundai stop making cars that are easy to steal. How about that, too? Ann Dornfeld is an investigative reporter at KUOW. Ann, thanks very much for being here.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.